Okay, good morning. So today I would like to speak a little bit about Har HaBayis. Har HaBayis for good things and less good things is in the news. And I'll talk of our rights to Har HaBayis and what our rights could be, should be. There are political issues, there are Torah issues, that's what we're going to be speaking about. I just want to open with a story that I think I mentioned it, I think in one of the men's room, maybe I mentioned it on Tisha B'Av, I don't know if anybody heard me downstairs on Tisha B'Av, but I had a student about 9 years ago, we had our summer trip to Israel with Big Gift for Beginners, and we got ourselves a rooftop in the Old City on top of a, it's called, what yeshiva is it called? Israelite. Israelite owns a rooftop right on the side of the steps going down to the Kotel, overlooking high up, overlooking not just the Kotel Plaza, but you could see over the Kotel onto Har HaBayis. And it's an incredible view. And there's Kabbalah Shabbos, so everybody sort of starts singing, and Lachadodi, and it's incredible because some of the Psukim talk about Hadras Ragleinu, we talked about the Psukim, Omdos, I don't know the Psukim specifically, talk about standing in Beis Hashem. And there was one boy who is very sincere. And we're dancing, singing, davening, Kabbalah Shabbos, and he looks over and he sees the Arab kids playing soccer on Har HaBayis. And all of a sudden, very quietly, everybody's still singing, dancing, I notice it's Friday night, after Shabbos, you know, we're ready, basically the Kabbalah Shabbos, I guess. He kicks off his shoes and sits down on the floor. And again, he didn't know enough to realize that you're not allowed to have a velus b'Shabbos, but he felt such a genuine sense of pain. Everybody else was, oh, beautiful view, incredible, the sunset over Har HaBayis, you see what you've never seen before from the angle that we're on. And he had that sensitivity to realize what a terrible view it was, seeing, you know, the destruction in front of his eyes, Arab children playing soccer on what we call the place where the Beis HaMikdash should be standing. And I didn't tell him not to do that. He sat on the floor, Avelos B'Shabbos, which is not the proper, as far as Hilchos Shabbos is concerned, that's not the proper way to do it. But he had that sensitivity of knowing, you know, when we go to the Beis HaMikdash, we go to the Kotel, sometimes people are very happy and very excited, and, you know, you go, certainly, there's dancing at the Kotel, and there used to be people playing drums at Kotel, but now they don't allow drums anymore. And it's an interesting kind of, you know, to see how different people react to the situation when we just took a group there this year, and the men, we were there Friday night, so the men had to daven, you know, the davening, and the women, the girls were on our program, you know, they were less into, let's say, the formal davening, they weren't brought up with it. So they were dancing, and that was their experience at the Kotel, the dancing. And it was, also you don't dance on Shabbos, that's a different question. But that very difficult to calibrate sense of what is our attitude supposed to be. One more, not a story, but a current event that comes up every year. Every year, morning, please. Every year, there's I think it might be the same fellow or group of people that get arrested every Erev Pesach. It's like every year, you know, you do Erev Pesach, you know, you do Erev Pesach, so this guy, he gets arrested every Erev Pesach. What does he do? He tries to break his way up to Har HaBayis with the sheep and to bring his Korban Pesach and make a little bit of a hullabaloo. And obviously, it's illegal. Although Jews are allowed, I'm not saying halachically, but legally, Jews are allowed on to be on Har HaBayis, they're not allowed to do anything there. They're allowed to walk through. They're allowed to just be on the perimeter and look. They're not allowed to, if the Arabs see that you're moving your mouth, you're praying, then you get thrown out. Certainly if you try to be makriv a korban for other issues also, that's something that happens. And again, the fact that it's the fact that it's so central to all of Judaism and other religions, you know, we know there's something special about Har HaBayis, everybody's fighting over it, and that's what I want to talk about. I want to start with the Rambam. The Rambam tells us the following. The Rambam tells us that the Mizbeach has its location on the top, right? Basically, under the dome of the rock, there's a rock. That rock is the Makom of the Mizbeach. I'm sorry, that rock is the place where the Aron was situated. And the Mizbeach would be placed not far from there. Its location is absolutely precise. And that location can never be adjusted, can never be altered, can never be pushed away, even an iota, la'olam, forever. And we have a Misora. Morning. We have a Misora, says the Rambam, that place that David HaMelech, Shlomo, built their Beis HaMidrash, that was the place, of course, that Avraham did the Akedah of Yitzchak. That was the place that when Noach came out of the Teva, he brought a Korban, it was on that same location. That was the place where Cain and Hevel brought their Korbanos that caused the whole argument between Cain and Hevel. It was on that same location. Adam HaRishon, when he was created, he brought a Korban, it was on that same exact location. And, of course, Chazal say that, again, Dome of the Rock over the foundation stone in Hebrew called the Evan HaShasiyah, the reason why it's called Evan HaShasiyah, Shemisham Hushtas, the whole world was emanated from this stone. That was the place that from which the world was emanated, and therefore Chazal say that Adam HaRishon's Kapara is from the place where he was created, meaning the Kapara that he brought a carbon on that same place from where he created. Mimakom Kaparaso Nivra. He was created from that very place where he got his Kapara. So we're talking about a place that's not just important to us from the time of David HaMelech. We're going back not just to the Avos, we're going back well, beyond the Avos. And it's incredible that we could, you know, when you read a Ksuva, somebody had a problem with their Ksuva recently, had to redo their Ksuva, and you talk about, you know, Poe, Lawrence, New York, but you give the date, you know, Shnas Chameshas Alefim, V'Shvam Me'os, V'Shivim V'Sheva, year 5,777, and to say that for the past 5,777 years, I know a location, a definitive location, where this location was used 5,777 years ago for a Korban by Yom HaRishon. And then Cain and Hevel, whatever it was, 5,000 whatever years ago, that exact spot, which just makes it a little bit incredible. So that leads us to a question. If there is this exact, precise location where the Mizbeach has to be, so however Adam figured out, I guess it was obvious to him, Cain and Hevel, maybe his father, Adam told them, Noach, I guess he was a Navi, he knew where the location should be. David and Shlomo, they were Navi, and they knew where to, you know, wherever they decided. Avram was told where to do the Akedah Yitzchak that Hashem told him explicitly, like the Torah says. But after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, we get thrown to Bavel. We come back after 70 years, and what do? We rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash. But at that point, how did they know exactly where to put the Mizbeach when they built that second Beis HaMikdash? What I'm saying is that there can't be where there are people who remembered exactly from, you know, people who were bar mitzvah at the time when the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so they were 83 when they came back to build the Mizbeach. Maybe they were there, but they remember exactly. Listen to what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that when the Jewish people returned from Bavel, after 70 years in Galus Bavel, returned to Eretz Yisrael, says the Rambam, three Nevi'im had to come up with them from Bavel. Remember, Nevi'im didn't exist anymore. This is the twilight at the very end of the period of Nevuah, because Nevi'im only existed during the first Beis HaMikdash. After the period of the first Beis HaMikdash, only those Nevi'im who were born during the first Beis HaMikdash were Nevi'im. Therefore, Mordechai, Esther, who lived in Bavel during that 70-year period, they were Nevi'im, but only because they were already born prior. They had that connection to the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. There were three old Nevi'im who came to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash. One of them was necessary, says the Rambam, to testify exactly the location, where the location of the Mizbeach should be. It's something that you couldn't just evaluate. It's probably, you know, about 15 feet from there, 15 feet from there, and the, you know, just if you ever had your tiles done in your kitchen, you know, the way they do their tiles are always from the middle, if I remember correctly. You ever watch the tile layer? I think they always measure, if they want the tiles to fit along the, you know, do your kitchen tiles. So, you're laying the tiles, and you want them to you know, fit right along the walls, because that's the hardest part, to fit the tiles to the contour of your walls. So we start from the middle. That's not how they were able to do the... They weren't able to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash and set the Mizbeach. We're going to put it in the middle. And that's... No, it didn't work like that. It was a perfectly precise location that a Navi had to... There was one of the Nevi'im that came with Bnei Yisrael up back with Ezra and Nehemiah to the second Beis HaMikdash. One of them had to come just for nothing more than to testify where to put the Mizbeach. Now... So that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about that makom, the makom of the Mizbeach, the makom of the Beis HaMikdash. Talk about some attempts over history, some attempts over history to try to bring korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, even though after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there were a number of attempts to try to bring sacrifices there. I want to talk about some of those things, and we'll see why. If any of you have ever gone to Eretz Israel and you were offered a tour, can you go of going up to Har HaBayis, what an appropriate reaction, an intelligent reaction, why you either would or wouldn't? Is it a good thing to go up onto Har HaBayis? Is it a problem? Why is it a problem, or if it is, and what could be the issues? So those are the topics I'd like to talk about. But before we do that, this week's parasha, this parasha is Re'eh. And parasha is Re'eh, I'm going to share with you a few psukim. And you'll notice something very funny when we go through these psukim. It talks about bringing korbanos only in the Beis HaMikdash. Only in Yerushalayim, only in the Beis HaMikdash. V'haya, ha-makom asher yivchar Hashem elokeichem. The place that Hashem chooses, shama, over there, taviu, there you should bring all of your korbanos. Make sure you don't bring korbanos to any other place that you sort of see fit. Ki'im b'makom asher yivchar Hashem. Only at that place that Hashem chooses, sham ta'ala lo secha, there you could bring your korban olos. V'sham, and over there, you'll do all the things I want you to do. What word is obviously missing from these psukim? It says Hashem's name. It says Hashem's name. I skipped a bunch of words. It doesn't say the word Yerushalayim. It doesn't identify. There's no proper noun. There's no capital word here. Hamakom asher, the place, shama, over there, they're all pronouns. So why is it that when Hashem talks about, like Hashem knew what he was thinking, like he knew when you and I read these psukim, we know he's talking about, of course, you have to bring the korbanos only in the base. I mean, it's only in Yerushalayim. No, the Torah says don't do it anywhere else, only in the place that I tell you. We know it's talking about Yerushalayim. But the Torah goes out of its way to not mention Yerushalayim. That's troubling. Because, again, Yerushalayim is mentioned plenty of times in Tanakh. But in terms of Chumash itself, certainly in this week's parasha, which is the source that we have to do everything that we have to build a Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, and it can't be anywhere else, and we're not allowed to bring a korban, you know, in our backyards in Far Rockaway or in Lawrence. Kim el hamakom asher. Why does it say the place? Why don't you say Yerushalayim? Why doesn't it say that? So, I want to share with you first something cute and then something a little bit more substantial. The Baal HaTurim says that the way that Yerushalayim is referenced is you have to come El HaMakom. Ayah HaMakom and Bamakom. You have to come El HaMakom. Says the Baal HaTurim that there's a way of formulating, of correlating or corresponding letters in the Hebrew alphabet called Atbash. Atbash is if there's an aleph, so the corresponding letter will be a tough. If there's a bays, the corresponding letter, this is the second letter of the alphabet, the corresponding letter will be shin, the second to last letter. So he said, in adbash, the of el hamakom to the place that I tell you, you get whatever letters, which in gematria is zer Yerushalayim. There's a reference. It's a little bit of a veiled reference, a little bit of a... The atbash of the words zeh hamakom, this is the place that you should bring the korbanos, is Yerushalayim. And more than that, listen to this. Oh, and said that I'll tell you. And he continued. That's correct. The psukim, these psukim, our parsha, do right. That's right. That's actually one of the reasons that the Rishonim suggests, which we'll mention in a moment. Yes. The makom in Gematria, also this is a Baal HaTurim, it's not me, it's not Hasidic Rebbe, this is a Baal HaTurim, again from 700 years ago. What's the Gematria of the word Makom? Again, that's the word that is referenced to Yerushalayim. Makom, Mem is 40. Kuf is 100, Vav is 146, plus Mem at the end is 186. That's the same gematria as Litzion. Also, Lamed is 30, Tzadi is 90, that's 120, Yud is 130, Vav is 136, plus 50, 186, they're both 186. Makom, which is the pasuk that we have, the word that we have, is a reference to Tzion. But that, these gematrias aren't going to do it for us. Now we're going to say, oh, that's why Hashem didn't say the word Yishalayim, because it's a reference with a backwards corresponding letter, it's the same gematria. No. Why doesn't it say Yishalayim? So this is the question that Rabbeinu Bechayi on our parasha asks. He says, why is it that it didn't say explicitly Har HaMoriah? If you don't want to use the word Yishalayim, I understand that. Because the word Yishalayim is a more modern word that didn't exist in the time of the Chumash. Because it's comprised, the way Chazal understands, comprised from the word Yira'eh and Shalem. And maybe it didn't become Yishalayim until later in history, but Har HaMoriah is a phrase that is a word that we have. Har HaMoriah appears. So why didn't it specify? The Rabbim in the Mor Nevuchim asked this question. Why did the Torah specify, go to Yerushalayim, go to Har HaMoriah, and that's where you should build the Beis HaMikdash, don't bring Korbanos anywhere else, your point notwithstanding, which we'll get to. And the Rambam gives three answers. And the Rambam says the following, that in the Mor Nevuchim, he says, let's say, do you realize how difficult life is now? With the Christians claiming their claims and the Muslims claiming their claims. Just imagine if it was explicit. And they all believe in the five books. They all believe. They just think that there's a new prophet, a new testament, or whatever it is. Imagine if it was explicit. They're causing us so much tsaris, and it's not explicit. Just imagine how difficult it would be if that location was specifically articulated in Chumash, if the Umos HaOlam would, and they realize, that that's the place where tefillah is more accepted. That's the places where Karbanos are supposed to be, are more accepted. If that was every, there would be so much fighting, as it is so much fighting. Just imagine how much fighting there would be among, between us and the nations of the world, if it was even explicit. It's so terrible as it is, it would just be magnified, it would be even worse than it already is. So much fighting. And we know, it's not just the claims to Israel from all the over the generations, not just because it's the traffic route between Europe, Africa, and Asia. It's that one sort of vertex between all the routes of the routes of trade. It's because also there's something special about everybody wanted their share. That's the first reason, because it would cause more trouble, says the Rambam. Another reason. Let's say the Kenanim, who lived in Eretz Yisrael before we came to Eretz Yisrael, the people who were there before we came in. Let's say they knew that there was one place that we really, really wanted and cared about. Let me give you an illustration from just a few years ago. So, when Israel gave away Gaza, the Gaza Strip, what is it, 10 years ago? 9 years ago? About 9 years ago. And they gave it to the Arabs. What happened after they gave away? There were beautiful, some beautiful communities. I don't know if you have relatives. I know some people in our show have some relatives there. There's some beautiful homes, lucrative businesses. So you'd think that if you have an impoverished people, you have the Palestinians, they're impoverished people, and many live in squalor and impoverished. So you'd think, here you have beautiful, gorgeous communities, houses, infrastructure, businesses. What would be the first thing you'd think of? Oh, they're leaving. I'm going to take over a nice 7-bedroom house with a whole, acres of greenhouses. What did they do? They destroyed everything. For whatever political reasons, they did that. Says the Rambam, what would happen if the Kenanim knew that the Jews are coming? Uh-oh, the Jews are coming. And you know why they're coming? Really, really, really deep down, they want their hub, their central, their heartbeat will be pumping from this place, Har HaMoriah. So what do you think the Kenanim are going to do in anticipation of the entrance of Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael? They would make sure that the most destroyed place in the whole country, the place that would be absolutely, utterly decimated before the Jews could even get there, would be, if you have your enemy's plans, you know exactly your enemy's coming in, and you have a spy, and you found out their war plan, and you know that they want to build their headquarters on wherever it might be, on this mountaintop, you're going to destroy, you're going to put mines there, they didn't have mines, but you're going to just create such a situation of destruction and desolation to prevent whatever attempts might be made in future years. That, says the Rambam, is another reason in the Moreh Nevuchim. That, says the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim, another reason why the Torah specifically omitted the word Har HaMoriah, omitted the word Yerushalayim, morning, from Chumash. Thirdly, he says, let's not look outside. What about distributing Eretz Yisrael? If you know that, there's so many machlokes and arguments about people inheriting from their relatives, and if Bnei Yisrael knew, Bnei Yisrael, I'm not talking about the other nations, if Bnei Yisrael knew that there's going to be, there's Yerushalayim, right? That's the place that is defined from before we enter Eretz Yisrael. Everybody knows that's the place that's going to be the hub, that's going to be the place that's the center, that's the place where you're going to have, do you realize what kind of business Yerushalayim brings? Let's think. Yerushalayim has, forget about, you know, people just coming for Aliyah L'Regel. You have millions and millions of people coming. It's great for the economy. You know, hotel business will, I think if a person believes in, you know, in the fact that Mashiach is coming, the best thing you could do is invest in a hotel in Yerushalayim, because you're going to have millions of people coming up. Again, you have to be able to raise the rates a lot during, if there's a regulation, it's going to be tough. But if you could pump up the rates as high as you want during the Yom Tovim, you have millions of people there on Yom Tovim. And listen to this, Maiser Sheni, that means if you have a farm in Beersheba, you have a farm in Haifa, you have to pay 10% of all of that which you grow. If you grow 1,000 bushels, you have to take 100 bushels down to Yerushalayim. Now, you can't carry 100 bushels of apples or mangoes to Yerushalayim, so you transfer the 100 bushels onto, let's say, you know, $1,000 of cash. You have to go to Yerushalayim and eat $1,000 of food in Yerushalayim. That's the mitzvah of Maaser Sheni. So that means that you have, the entire country is spending 10% of its income on only food. I'm not talking about lodging, I'm not talking about gifts for your friends back home. 10% of the entire country's GDP has to be spent on food items in Yerushalayim. You can open up restaurants, you could charge anything and everything, and you could, there's no end to the amount of the commerce opportunities that Yerushalayim would provide. So imagine you're going into Eretz Yisrael, and you know that somebody in this room is going to be inheriting that place. Well, if you know where that place was, there'd be fighting among Bnei Yisrael, says the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim. If Bnei Yisrael knew exactly where that place will be, they didn't know before they went in. They just knew, El HaMakom, to the place, El HaMakom, El HaMakom, El HaMakom, to the place that I'll show you, to the place that I'll choose. They didn't know. And therefore, when Eretz Yisrael was divided and distributed, there's nothing to fight about, because nobody knows who's going to get what or where that special place will be. Okay, later in time, it came out that this was the, it was specified where exactly the Beis HaMikdash will be, but that's why it's the Rambam says, to prevent infighting from us, between us and our fellow Shvatim, Hashem didn't want us to fight within ourselves, and therefore, the Rambam suggests that Hashem wasn't mefarsim the location, that would be the place. Meaning, they knew that there's a special place called Har HaMoriah. They knew that there's a place called Har HaMoriah, but they didn't know that Har HaMoriah was the place where the Beis HaMikdash would, in the future, be the place that Hashem chooses, and be the place where the Mikdash will be built. Those are the three suggestions that the Moreh Nevuchim explains why there's no reference specifically to the word Yerushalayim in Chumash, where it just says, to the place that I show you, to the place that I choose. There's one more reason, and that's what Mrs. Bain suggested, that the Kliyakar says. The Kliyakar says that in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, there were cities until they built the Beis HaMikdash and between the first, after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Before the first Beis HaMikdash was built, there were places where they were allowed to bring karbanos. The Mishkan traveled there, and Hashem was concerned, if you specify a location, if you say the word Yerushalayim, you don't just say, to the place that I choose. So what will people's attitudes be towards the Mishkan before the Beis HaMikdash is built, and before Yerushalayim is actually chosen? If it says, we're going to have a Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, Hashem chooses Yerushalayim, what's going to happen for those, how long did it take from the time Bnei Yisrael entered Israel until the Beis HaMikdash was actually built in the first place? 10 years? 50 years, how long did it take? 100 years? It took 400. From the time Yeshua brought Bnei Yisrael over the Yarden into Israel until we had the Beis HaMikdash. So Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash. It's 500 years. So 500 years, that's a big chunk of history. In those 500 years, there were other places where Bnei Yisrael, like Ms. Bain pointed out, were able to bring the Karbanos. So what would happen if everybody knew, everybody learns the Pasuk in Chumash, and everybody knows that there's a place called Yerushalayim, and that's where Hashem chose. Oh, so what are we doing now? In Nov, in Givon, in Shiloh, all the other cities where the Mishkan was temporarily, where the Karbanos were brought meanwhile, until the Beis HaMikdash was actually built, all those other places, people aren't going to take it seriously. People are going to realize, this is the second fiddle. This is not their main place. This is the, you know, not really the place that anyone takes seriously. And therefore, the Kli Yakar says, not to bring a denigration, not to bring a lack of respect to those places, Hashem specifically did not mention did not mention the word Yerushalayim. Didn't say Har HaMoriah. He just left it as a pronoun to the place that I will show you. And therefore, wherever it was that we had the Mishkan, we gave it proper respect, and ultimately when the Beis HaMikdash was built in the future, then of course we realized that was the place that it will be permanently. Okay. That's as far as an introduction to what we want to talk about. Why the word Yerushalayim is never mentioned. I want to tell you two stories, both historical accounts. After the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70 of the Common Era, is there any? I mentioned to you that there's this guy every year of Pesach who wants to bring his carbon Pesach and he gets arrested every year. Is there any validity to an attempt to bring a carbon nowadays? If you saw a guy walking his sheep up that, you know, that ramp on, you know, there's the men's section, the women's section, on the side of the women's section, there's this ramp that goes up to the door at Har HaBayis. If you see a guy with, without shoes, of course, because you're not allowed to wear shoes on Har HaBayis, so you see him without shoes, he's walking, he can't carry walking staff either, he's walking with a sheep, his big knife in his hands, walking with a sheep up that ramp. What's going to go through your mind? He's a nut job. He's a tzaddik. What's going to go through your mind? He's willing to be Moser Nefesh and deal with the Arabs, but he's doing what's right. Is he doing what's wrong? What's your attitude? I mean, he's going to the right place, but we don't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore. So if there's no Beis HaMikdash, is there any... What? There's no need? Is there any point? If he does it, if he tries to bring a carbon there, will it be meaningful? Is he a terrible person? I want to share with you two stories. One is the Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara in Pesachim says the following. And this is, if you're a detective, there's a little detective work that has to be done. The Gemara says the following. There's a story with Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel is a famous name. Rabban Gamliel was wealthy, and he had a servant named Tevi. We see stories about his servant named Tevi in other places. He's a well-known, famous slave. Rabban Gamliel told Tevi, his slave, I want you to go roast the Korban Pesach on a certain kind of spit. They had to roast, right? You have a rotisserie. We just got a barbecue grill and it had a rotisserie. You know, that's I pronounced correctly, rotisserie to turn the chicken around. So they had to do that with the Korban Pesach. And he told Rabban Gamliel, the famous Rabban Gamliel, told his famous slave Tevi to roast the Korban Pesach on a certain kind of rotisserie spit for the Korban Pesach. That's the story. The question is, who's Rabban Gamliel? When did Rabban Gamliel live? Well, there are two Rabban Gamliels that might be the person who we're talking about. There's one Rabban Gamliel who is the famous Tein li Yavne v'chachameha, that after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, he was the Rabban Gamliel of Yavne who thrived after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. But he wasn't even bar mitzvah by the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So if it's talking about him, that means, if it's talking about during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, then he was like 9 years old. So first of all, he probably wouldn't have had a famous slave. Second of all, if he was 9 years old, 10 years old, maybe 6 years old, the Gemara wouldn't be recording what he's telling. People record, oh, I heard from Rechaim Kanievsky that, I heard from Eliyashiv that, I heard from Moshe Feinstein that. They don't say, I heard from a 7-year-old kid something or other about what kind of spit you use for the Korban Pesach. If the Gemara is telling us the story about this phantom Rabbi Gamliel, who told his famous slave a certain halach about what kind of spit you use for the Korban Pesach, it must be, if we're a detective, it must be that he's an important person. Rabbi Gamliel, that we know, was only an important person in the decades after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So if we, using our detective caps, put these 2 points together, he's telling his slave how to do the Korban Pesach, how to go ahead and set up the Korban Pesach for the family, and he's living when? Decades after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It seems from this that this is a source that indeed, after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, they were still being makriv a Korban Pesach. Which is incredible. I thought after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, no more Korbanos. And here we seem to have a story about Rabbi Gamliel, who only makes sense for him. You know, again, he was a child during the second Beis HaMikdash, so it only makes sense that it happened decades after. And it seems like he's bringing a Korban Pesach after the destruction of the Korban of the Beis HaMikdash, which then we have to figure out. And we also have to figure out why only a Korban Pesach, if anything. Yeah. Right, correct. That would be true, except for the way the story is recorded is that he was telling his slave to do it. Like, he was telling his slave, bring the Korban Pesach like this, you know, do it like this. It's like, bring my ties to the cleaners and tell them that there's a spot on the, you know, there's a spot on, you know, on the, you know, whatever, over there, you know, I bring my skirt to the cleaners, on the bottom left there's a stain. Right. So it's telling him, bring the Korban Pesach and I want you to do it like this. That's just how it's recorded. Okay, that was the first case. Second story is much later. There was a famous Jew in the time that he showed him named Ishtori HaParchi. Ishtori HaParchi was, you know, Marco Polo, he traveled the world and he wrote about his travels, Mark Twain also, and people were big travelers. So Ishtori HaParchi was a Jew, Talmud Chacham, one of the Rishonim, who traveled, came from, I guess, Europe, wherever they lived. I don't know if he was Ashkenazi or Sephardi. Ishtori. I don't know any Ashkenazi named Ishtori. Sounds like a Sephardi name. He came to Eretz Yisrael, and he wrote everything that he could tell us about Eretz Yisrael in the time of the 1300s or so, 1200s, 1300s. I think he lived around during the 1300s. He was a Talmud of the Rush, so he lived in the mid-1300s, let's say. Ishtori HaParchi says the following story. He says that something that we'll talk about shortly, you know, I was nervous to go into the area of the, you know, the Beis HaMikdash, because there it could be problematic to walk in, which we'll see why soon. And then he says, that this, one of the other Rishonim told me, that Rabbi Yechiel de Paris, guess where he was from? Very good. He was a well-known Rishon who lived in Paris, right? We know the Jewish people lived in France. Rashi was from Paris, from France, and the Tosos were from France, and Rabbi Natan was from many Rishonim lived in France. Rabbi Yechiel mi Paris lived in Paris, was one of the great Rishonim. He's well-known from other places. Rabbi Yechiel mi Paris said that he wants to come to Yerushalayim, and he tells us in this book, Ishtori HaParchi, this is the Marco Polo, again, this Talmud of the Rav, living in the late 1300s, comes to his son. He says that there was this account of Yechiel mi Paris came, I don't have to give you the Hebrew date, I tried to figure it out, to the year 1257. In the year 1257, he came with a plan to bring Karbanos on the Beis HaMikdash, in Har HaBayis. Yechiel mi Paris is one of our great Rishonim. In the year 1257, is that a long time ago or not a long time ago? 1,200 years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. 1,200 years. This is 600 years after Islam is up and running. After whatever Muhammad. I'd say this is modern. 1257 is almost modern times, you know, in thinking about the Beis HaMikdash. And in that year, he said, oh, I want to go and bring Karbanos on the Har HaBayis. I'm going to make a pilgrimage to Eretz Israel. And this Ishtori HaParchi responds, but I forgot to ask him. I was trying to work on a certain sefer with this person to help me write up my sefer, and I was so involved with my sefer, I didn't get to follow up on that conversation. What is he going to do about the fact that we're Tamei? What is he going to do about the fact that we don't really know who the Kohanim are? what he ends up, what you see is that there seemed to be an attempt by one of our great Rishonim in the 1200s, somebody who is very much a part of our Masorah, who we might rely on for halacha in other areas of halacha, Rabbi Chil Miparis, and he apparently wanted to bring Karbanos in the 1200s. That more than 1,000 years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So this sort of brings us to the 1800s. In the 1800s, that's when this idea of possibly bringing Karbanos in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash reached its crescendo. There was a gigantic Talmud Chacham named Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer. Some of you might have heard his name. But Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer was a very, I won't say he was one of the leaders of the generation, but he was a very respected Talmud Chacham. He was a student of the leaders of the generation, clearly Rabbi Akiva Eiger and Chasam Sofer. And he wrote a letter to none other than Baron Usher Anshel Rothschild. Usher Anshel Rothschild was the man. He was the biggest donor for everything Jewish, and he was the one who supported single-handedly the entire yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. This is in the 1860s or so, 1870s. He writes a letter to Usher Anshel Rothschild, and encouraging him to support the attempts for Aliyah, support the early settlements in Eretz Yisrael. And while he's encouraging him and saying how important it is to encourage settlement in Eretz Yisrael in the late 1800s, mid to late 1800s, he then goes on a tangent and builds what ends up being a sefer that's called Drishas Tzion, Seeking Out Tzion. And there, again, it all started with a letter to Usher Anshel Rothschild. He says how we should ask the rulers of the land of Israel, whoever they might be at that point, to allow us to start to bring Karbanos on Har HaBayis. And in the midst of, Usher Anshel Rothschild was the guy who would make it happen, but he wanted to get the haskama, the agreement of the other leader, Torah leaders of the generation, because it was obviously something that was not, with all of our Jewry living either in Persia or in Europe, there wasn't so much action in Eretz Israel, so he wanted to get the leading. So he wrote to all the great leaders of Europe, all the great leaders of his generation, Rabbi Akiva Eiger and the Chasam Sofer and his Chasam Sofer's Rabbi, and others, and about his suggestions, why he thinks it is appropriate, not only appropriate, why he thinks it's obligatory to go ahead and do what we can to, he didn't say to build the Beis HaMikdash, said to bring Karbanos in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. And he gathered his letters, and the letters that the various leaders of the generation, Torah leaders of the generation, responded to him, gathered them together into what's now a beautiful sefer called Drishas Tzion. And we'll mention a few of the points that he discussed in that that work, and hopefully, maybe discuss that. We will, even if we can't bring Karban after the Shir, hopefully learning about bringing Karbanos might give us a little zechus to bring us a step closer. We'll mention maybe 2 points from his arguments. Number one, there are many different levels of requirements of being Tahar. What I mean by that is, Eretz Yisrael has a certain level of Kedusha. Yerushalayim has a higher level of Kedusha. Har HaBayis, the Temple Mount, not the Beis HaMikdash, the Temple Mount has a higher level of Kedusha than the rest of Yerushalayim. Within the Temple Mount, there are various courtyards going, concentric ripples inwards and inwards and inwards of 5 or 6 more levels of Kedusha, till you get to, of course, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is, of course, the epicenter of Kedusha, the epicenter of where Tahara has to be. And each of these parameters, for example, in Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to have anybody who has tzaraas, right? In Har HaBayis, you can't have anybody who is a woman who gave birth, for example, Anida, Zav, is not allowed onto Har HaBayis. Somebody who's Tamei for a mace is not allowed in this area. Goyim, even if they're not, and they don't have any specific tuma, I don't know if tuma applies to Goyim at all, but Goyim weren't allowed into, there's a wall called the Sorig. It was a pretty, like a mechitza, like a low mechitza, I think it was this high or so. And that was called the Sorig. It was a certain fence. And goyim were not allowed into that fence. There was an incredible, incredible archaeological discovery. It's called the Temple Warning Inscription. They found it in 1871 in archaeological, you know, now the Arabs say there was never a base. If you do, the new Arab lie is that there was never a temple. Not a first, not a second. It's all part of the Zionist propaganda. Anyway, so the Mishnah in the Mishnayos talk about the fact that the goyim are not allowed in, past this soreg, this gate. And the Mishnayos speak about the fact that there was a warrant that they told all the goyim. There's a sign up mentioning to the goyim that you can't come in. Anyway, in 1871, they found this temple warning inscription, otherwise known as the soreg inscription. And they... It is written in Old Greek from the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. And I have a translation of the... I'm not quoting a Chazal now. I'm not quoting a Mishnah. I'm quoting to you a translation of a rock that was found, a carved-out rock that was found on Har HaBayis in 1871. No czar. Czar is with stranger, which means somebody who can't, you know. No stranger is to enter within this azara, this courtyard, around the temple and its enclosure. Whoever is caught will be responsible for himself, to himself, for his death, which will ensue. Interestingly enough, there was another one that was found also, because there were. If you imagine, if you have a danger to not enter on this door, you need one on that door also. The Beis HaMikdash had numerous, you know, directions from which people came in, and they found two of these with the same text on it, or almost the same text. One's in the Israel Museum, another one was discovered when the Ottoman Turks were in control, so it was taken back to a museum in Turkey or something. So either way, goyim are not allowed in certain parts of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Jews are not allowed in certain parts of the Beis, in the area of the Beis HaMikdash, right? If a person was ever at a funeral, a person ever shook hands with somebody who was at a funeral, a person was ever possibly even in a hospital where there might have been a mace, so that person's tummy, and therefore can't go into certain areas of Har HaBayis. Now the question is, and this is really the million-dollar question, that next time you get asked, oh, would you like to take a tour onto Har HaBayis, this is the question that we have to wonder. Are those limitations that somebody who's tummy can't enter the Har HaBayis, is that only while the Beis HaMikdash is there? Meaning, the Beis HaMikdash, with the presence of the Shekhinah, that's what prohibits me as a tummy person from entering this holy area. But once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and the Shekhinah in a certain sense has dissipated, has left that area, so you're right, I'm tummy, but it's what's there. Now, there's no Beis HaMikdash there. Is there any holiness to the Har HaBayis in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash? That's really the question we have to ask. If you tell me that there is holiness there, then I, who's Tameh, right, I once went to a Levaya, I can't go up there. Fine. On the other hand, if you tell me that no, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Shekhinah left, the halachas of Tumah don't apply anymore there, and therefore, yes, I'm Tameh, yes, I went to a funeral, yes, I might have all kinds of Tumahs, but it doesn't matter because there's nothing there that I have to be worried about, and I could go as a Tameh person onto the Har HaBayis. That's the question. Now, what's the answer to that question? The answer to that question is that it's really a machlokas, an unresolved machlokas in Klal Yisrael from the time of the Gemara, which is ruled as a machlokas between the Rambam and his counterpart who often argues on him, the Ravid, back in the 1100s. So the Rambam says that even if you say that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, listen carefully, Eretz Yisrael might have dissipated once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, but the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is a different Kedusha. The Kedusha of Yerushalayim remains. And I'll explain to you why that is. The Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, what sanctified Eretz Yisrael when Eretz Yisrael became sanctified? Right, do you bring Trumas and Mais? Anyone have a tomato garden in their backyard? Tomatoes? Okay, you separate Trumas and Maisos? No? I thought I could eat at your house, Mrs. Sutterbrook. You don't separate Trumas and Maisos. You don't, because you're in America, of course not. But in Eretz Yisrael, if you had a tomato garden. In Eretz Yisrael, my mother-in-law has a lemon tree. She also has a date tree, which gives lulavim. My father-in-law uses the lulav from his own date tree. But they have a lemon tree. They actually do something interesting. It's funny. The lemons don't grow all year, obviously. They grow a certain time of the year. They take the lemons into the house. You have to separate the trumas and the maestros, which is great, because when my kids go for the summer, my mother-in-law shows them how to separate trumas and maestros. So, you know, in America, it's not that you could learn hands-on. So there, they could sit down at the dining room table, separate trumas and maestros, say whatever I have to say, cut them up. Okay. Then what my mother-in-law does is she takes all the lemons at a certain time of the year, squeezes them into ice cube containers. So this way you have, and then she puts them in the deep freezer in the basement. So all year long, you have, again, you can't keep a lemon for, you know, 8 months, but you could keep that squeezed juice from the lemon from 8 months ago as an ice cube in the freezer. So it's very, okay, so in Eretz Yisrael, there's Kedusha to the fruits. That's all Darabanan. When you go to Eretz Yisrael, you go on vacation, you just came back, and you go for a hash. You want to look for a good hashgacha on the, it's an apple, what do you need a hashgacha for? You need a hashgacha on the apples because you want to make sure the trumos and the maestros and orla and all the other halachos apply. That's all Darabanan nowadays. That's all Darabanan. So we could remember how to do it. So when the time comes and the basement is rebuilt, we'll know what we're doing. But Mita Raisa, there's no trumos and maestros nowadays. Why not? The Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, so all of that Kedusha, right, still left. Well, if the Kedusha, right, still left, there's no Trumas and Maestros for the Torah, Midoraisa, so maybe the Kedusha of Yerushalayim also left, and me, who's a Tamei, who went to a funeral a few weeks ago, I should be able to go on to Har HaBayis. Why is there a difference that the fruits and vegetables, Midoraisa, there's no Kedusha, there's no Trumas and Maestros, Midoraisa nowadays, we only do it to Rabbanan. Midoraisa we don't. But yet, I'm still nervous to go as a Tamei person onto Har HaBayis. The answer the Rambam explains is as follows. There's a difference. What sanctified Eretz Yisrael with a Kedusha that we therefore had to keep Truma and Meiser and Orla and all those halakhas that relate to the fruits of Eretz Yisrael? The fact that the Jewish people conquered the land. The conquering of Eretz Yisrael by Yeshua in his time instilled the Kedusha into his land. Well, guess what? After that, it was conquered away from us. The Romans came, Babylonians came, and they conquered the land. And therefore, that Kedusha that was instilled when Yeshua conquered the land dissipated when it was taken away from us, when we lost the conquering of the land. That's why the Rambam says there's no longer Kedusha to Eretz Yisrael, at least Midaraisa. However, what sanctified the Beis HaMikdash, Yerushalayim? When Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash, however he did it, there was a whole process, which we don't have to go into. You have to have a king, Melech Yisrael, Shlomo HaMelech. You needed a Navi. You needed Urim V'tumim of the Kohen Gadol, and all kinds of things, and there were Karbanos that were brought. It's a procedure for instilling Kedusha into Yerushalayim, described in the Torah. And Shlomo HaMelech did that. And that process was followed, so therefore it instilled Kedusha into Yerushalayim, and therefore Yerushalayim has this Kedusha even after Eretz Yisrael is conquered. Because again, Eretz Yisrael's Kedusha was created because of our conquest of the land. So when we lost conquest of the land, it dissipated. But Shlomo HaMelech, who went through this specific investiture procedure, a very specific procedure, how to invest Kedusha into Yerushalayim, that act that he did was forever. He instilled Kedusha into Yerushalayim with these karbanos and with this gathering of the Kohen Gadol and the Melech and the Urim V'tumim and the signs from Hashem and the Urim V'tumim. And that act of instilling Kedusha into Yerushalayim was forever. And therefore the Rambam's opinion is that even though Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael has dissipated, and Trumas and Maestros nowadays in Haifa and Be'er Sheva and Tel Aviv, there's only Darabanan, it's not Midaraisa. However, the Kedusha of Yerushalayim itself is still intact, just as it was in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash and in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. It is equally intact today. That's called Kedusha that Shlomo HaMelech did. He sanctified it, L'sha'ata, for its time, L'asud Mavo, forever. That's the Rambam's opinion. And therefore, because of this Rambam, there would be a prohibition, Midoraisa, let me rephrase that, a prohibition that would be liable of kares, God forbid, for a person who's Tamei, to walk into certain parts of Har HaBayis where somebody whose tummy is not permitted to walk. That's the issue. That's the main issue. Now, the people who take the tours onto Har Bayis start the conversation by saying, oh, there's a Ravid who says you're allowed to. That's the Ravid who argues on this Rambam. The Ravid is of the opinion, he's a contemporaneous shortly after the Rambam, and the Ravid is of the opinion that no, just like the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael has dissipated when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so to the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, of the Beis HaMikdash, also was temporary, and will also only lasted as long as the Beis HaMikdash was there. And therefore, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there's no longer Kedusha. Oh, according to this opinion, if there's no longer Kedusha, what does that mean? If there's no longer Kedusha there, it's okay for me, who's Tamei, to walk onto Har HaBayis, because there's nothing on you on the Har HaBayis. Har HaBayis is meaningless at this point. Har HaMoriah, there's nothing there. There's no Kedusha. There's no punishment, kares, if a tummy person walks there. There's nothing special there anymore. You could go, farm your animals on Har HaBayis, because the Kedusha is completely gone and there's nothing there, according to the Ravid. But wait a sec. You know what else would come out from this discussion? Forget about walking on Har. You remember I started this with the discussion of that fellow who goes on Erev Pesach to bring his sheep? Let's think for a second with what we just heard. Is there any reason to bring a korban nowadays? We're not going to get into all the other issues. Do you have to have a mizbeach? Where will the mizbeach be? Do you need to have a kohen? Who is a kohen? Who's a real kohen? Who's not a real kohen? Do you need to have the begadim of the kohen? Without those side details. Is there any point in bringing a korban in the Beis HaMikdash? Well, let's think. You know what should depend on? The argument that we just discussed of whether there's any significance now to Har HaBayis. According to the Rambam's opinion, the Rambam, who I told you, says that the Kedusha that Shalom has sanctified Yerushalayim with is an eternal Kedusha, and therefore if I go there, I will get kares because I'm Tameh. But accordingly, what is there on Har HaBayis? There's Kedusha there. There's room to even suggest maybe you should bring a korban, because there's some Kedusha, there's something significant about Har HaBayis. On the other hand, the other opinion, the Ravid who was of the opinion that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, just like the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael as a whole was destroyed, so to the Kedusha of Yerushalayim dissipated, there's nothing there. Well, if there's nothing there, why would that guy be taking his sheep up the ramp to a place where there's nothing there? So what you come out is a very funny situation like this. If there's Kedusha, so then there's a point in possibly bringing a korban nowadays, in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash. But there's Kedusha there, so you can't go there because there would be kares. On the other hand, if you hold that, oh, I could go there. I don't get kares. I could go there. I'm allowed to go there. That's only because there's no Kedusha there. And if there's no Kedusha there, then there's no point in bringing a korban. So you sort of have, if there is Kedusha there, then you can't go there. If there's no Kedusha there, so why would you bring a korban? There's not, you wouldn't accomplish anything. So that's just an interesting way of looking at the discussion of the question of people going on to Har HaBayis. Now, I want to finish with 2 points. And one is technical, and one is more a little bit of machshava. We mentioned that there's a problem if we're Tamei to go on to Har HaBayis, right? That's what the Rambam says, there's still Kedusha there, and if maybe there's a point of bringing a korban, but I'm Tamei. Can I ask you a question? Forget about that wacko who goes up on every Erev Pesach and gets himself arrested every Erev Pesach. What about that story that we started with half an hour ago about Rabban Gamliel? Remember I told you that there was a Rabban Gamliel who had to, he was a child during the second Beis HaMikdash. He was only mature years later. He was one of the heads of the community of Yavne after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And he told his famous slave, Tevi, to bring a Korban Pesach. And I pointed out that was after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. I don't understand. How is he able to do that? After all, listen to this. If we're Tameh, how could we don't have a paradum anymore, we can't go up to the Beis HaMikdash. How could we bring a Korban Pesach? There's one Korban in the world. There's one Korban in the world
Let me phrase that.
There's one genre of korbanos in the world that you could bring even if you're tamei. There's a genre of korbanos that even a person who's tamei, even people who are tamei, could bring a korban. And that is korbanos tzibur. Korbanos tzibur, any korban that's not a personal korban for me, for myself, but it's a korban for the community, for Klal Yisrael, can be brought even if Bnei Yisrael are tamei. There's one problem. How do you buy a korban tzibur? What makes it a communal korban? Well, what makes, if I say the government, the United States, is buying a piece of property to build an Air Force base, what makes it the United States' property?
The taxes.
Exactly. So how do you buy korbanos tzibur? Every Jew pays taxes. What was the tax that every Jew paid?
To,
exactly. Everybody gave a half a shekel. We're all equal partners. You gave a half. It doesn't matter how rich, how poor anybody is. Everybody gave half a shekel. We're all equal partners in all the korbanos. But machatzis hashekel is discontinued if there's no Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, listen to what just happened. A korban tzibur, a public korban, can be brought even if we're tamei. But the only way to get a korban tzibur is by everybody giving a machatzis hashekel. And you can only give a machatzis hashekel. There's only machatzis hashekel enterprise if there's a Beis HaMikdash. So if there's a Beis HaMikdash, then you could have korbanos tzibur. If there's no Beis HaMikdash, then we don't collect the machatzis hashekel, and then we can't bring a korban tzibur because we're tamei. Only korban tzibur is knock out the tuma problem. And this is the punchline now. There's one korban in the world that is a korban tzibur and can be brought while we're tamei, but is not purchased with machatzis hashekel money. There's one korban in the world that's a korban tzibur and can be brought even bituma, but it doesn't need a machatzis hashekel to buy it. And that is the korban Pesach. How is the korban Pesach purchased? Everybody chips in. It's not a personal korban. Families join together and they buy with as a partnership of 5, 10, 50, 100 people, everybody gives a dollar, everybody gives $5, depending on how much meat they want to eat, and they chip in to that to buy a korban Pesach. Wow, we just found a korban that can be brought while you're tamei, and that's a korban tzibur, even though was not purchased through machatzis hashekel, because it doesn't need to be machatzis, but through machatzis hashekel. That's the reason why, when we started half an hour ago, Rabbi Gamliel, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, told his slave Tevi to bring what? Only a korban Pesach. Because that's the only one in the present Tumah that we are find ourselves, unfortunately, without a paraduma to cleanse us from our Tumah. It's only the korban Pesach that can be brought. And that's why this crazy person is not as crazy as we think. He's not trying to bring a korban Tumid. He's not trying to bring a korban Toda. He's trying to bring only Erev Pesach because he knows that a korban Pesach is the only korban that can be brought even if there is tuma. So that's just a little bit of an understanding. Not saying that he's right, there are other issues, but I just want to finish with a little bit of a machshava about thinking about the Beis HaMikdash. And that is that who's Mashiach? So if you ask certain communities, they'll tell you they know who Mashiach is. The rest of us might be a little less certain who Mashiach is. Well, I think we could be certain who Mashiach isn't. The Rambam tells at the very end of the entire Sefer of the Rambam, he writes a little bit about Mashiach. And he says the following, and we're going to finish with this. There'll come a time that there will stand up a Melech. Melech will have to be from Beis David, from the tribe of Yehuda, because Mashiach has to be Mashiach ben David. And he's going to be learned in Torah, and he's going to do mitzvahs like David, his grandfather. He'll follow Torah Shebichtav, he'll follow Torah Shebal Peh, right? He's not going to be like a Messiah who only follows one, not the other. And he will force all the Jewish people to stick to Torah and mitzvahs, and he'll battle the battles of Hashem, I don't know what that means. That person is very possibly Mashiach. Maybe he is, maybe he won't be. Rabbi Akiva thought that Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. He had all these he was from Beis David, and he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he encouraged all the Jewish people to do mitzvahs. Continues the Rambam, if that person who might possibly be Mashiach, if he battles the enemies around the Jewish people, and he builds the Beis HaMikdash, and he gathers Bnei Yisrael, the Kibbutz Galios, all from all over the world, that's for certain Mashiach. If he didn't succeed in doing those things, he didn't build the Beis HaMikdash, he didn't gather in all the things, or he's killed, then you know he is not Mashiach. He might have been, at best, a great guy. So all the false Mashiachs who are no longer with us, by definition, are not Mashiach. We're waiting, hopefully, for Mashiach to come. And one of his jobs to prove that he's Mashiach will be to Bezat Hashem build the Beis HaMikdash. And hopefully, by learning a little bit about the Beis HaMikdash, we should be protected from all of the politics and the perils and the arguments and the fights that surround us regarding the Beis HaMikdash, and we should be fortunate very speedily to have Mashiach come, rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, clarify all the confusion that all the nations of the world have, so we could come, El HaMakom, to the place that Hashem chose to give to us. Thank you all for coming, for participating, and Be'ezus Hashem, next week, this shiur will not be on Wednesday, it will be